Hello everyone, welcome for those who are new in the room. We had a very nice session about OSGeo. Sadly you missed it, you can always watch it back afterwards. But we're now having our next session, and that's from Chris and from Kevin, who are working with Facebook. And they're not. They're gonna show us and tell us more about an automated ingestion framework for OpenStreetMap data that allows us to selectively update parts of the map. So I myself am very curious what it is about. So give them a warm applause to welcome, and let's give it a go.
Alright, hey everybody, I'm Christopher, and Kevin as we've gone, and today we're going to cover some of our adventures in using OSM data at Facebook. So maintaining quality in a database with millions and millions of features is difficult, and OSM is a giant database with millions and millions of features and thousands of mappers, and ensuring data quality here kind of has been a challenge throughout the history of the project. At Facebook, we've been thinking about how to maintain quality and also how to improve it, in part by ensuring that only good stuff is getting onto the map as best we can. So today we'll talk about the tooling and the AI that we're using to do that. Okay, so it may or may not surprise you to learn that Facebook has maps. There are many and various use cases. We have maps for places like search and events and travel. There are humanitarian causes. There are job listings pages. You might even find it useful to send a friend your location if you're trying to meet up, say, at a conference in a foreign place. And so what we found is that high-quality maps make for better user experiences. In fact, we've got more than 140 different use cases across the entire Facebook library of apps. For now, what we're doing is we're using OSM as our base map globally for all the maps that we have. But OSM data is only one part of what makes up a map on Facebook. The teams will layer on additional data on top of it for the various products. So you might be visiting a places page and all the pin locations are actually Facebook data and not OSM data. So they're from a totally different data set. Or you may find that you're, visiting, seeing like a job listing and having the location data there, or looking up restaurant recommendations from your friends and having them show up on a map in your feed. And as a user-facing product, of course, we're very interested in keeping an excellent user experience. And to do that, that means keeping kind of like a high level of quality data. And the world's a very big place, and so there are lots of things that can go wrong in lots of places. And we approach the problem in two different ways, reactively and proactively. First, talking reactively, one of the ways we do this is through map reports on our product. On any map surface on Facebook, you'll have the ability to report a maps issue, and a user can bring that to our attention. Like, this town name is wrong, or this road looks incorrect, or, my business isn't located here, or, this isn't the location I searched for, or something like that. And we get about 600 of these reports each day, and we have a team that goes through and looks at each and every one. Since we started using OpenStreetMap on our maps, there have been over 192,000 user reports have been made that we've gone through each one and taken a look at it. Generally, the reports fall into these two buckets. We've got ones that are relevant to Facebook data to get fixed, and then also ones that get fixed in the community, on OSM that we fix with the community. Here's an example of a fix on Facebook data. So although the map is correct, the base map has the right village name from OpenStreetMap, what you're seeing is that the Facebook kind of surrounding has the wrong places information from Facebook's data set. And so in this case, we talk to the appropriate team at Facebook and we get that fixed. So the user reports it, we get that fixed. The other case is kind of more typical, and this is where we'd find something going on OpenStreetMap. And we try and go in and fix it. So to date, we've had almost 400 issues have been directly fixed by our team in OpenStreetMap, directly from these issues we've reported. And beyond that, there are also some broader scale issues, like generic names, things like name is equals yes, or name equals road, or name equals a building. And we found thousands of these all over the map. And so we set up tasks to fix these, and our partner in Indonesia, HOT Indonesia, has fixed more than 15,000 of these themselves using Map Roulette. Beyond that, we've also made public tasks in MapRoulette, public challenges, where we fixed we've had over 30,000 features fixed there. But there are plenty more to go, so those are up and available. If you've been on MapRoulette in the last, I don't know, 6 to 8 months or so, you might have seen some of these incorrect name challenges that we've set up. There are lots of these. This is, you know, an example of one of the ones that we've got up. Let's see, and here's kind of some statistics about issues that we fixed in MapRoulette. There's kind of three buckets of information that we've got going on here for different types of fixes, and then what kind of where they were fixed, whether it was a Facebook fix or a community fix. And we found too that, you know, we'll go and work on these kind of publicly with our accounts and our mapping teams and fix them there. And we've also found that when the information's out there, the community will definitely engage with what's there and you know, is interested in making fixes as well. And also, let's see, yeah. So I guess, can you read? No, probably not. The leftmost bucket there for scale, the green bar is 6,000 fixes. So those are community fixes that we've had done through MapRoulette, and that's over 6,000. So there's been quite a few issues here. Okay, so next I'd like to talk a bit about some of the integration that we've got with ID in terms of kind of fixing bad data before it gets into the map. And so we love ID. We've been using it as our main mapping tool for our AI-assisted projects for years. And when we were doing this a while back, one of our main gaps was having a better validation system. So using Jotham as inspiration for this, we've kind of been adding validations into ID to catch common issues, like a geometry check for, I don't know, a road's crossing another road, this road's too short, there's a road that's not connected to the road network here, you know, all sorts of these. And we shared out our original version, which was on the left, kind of homegrown with Brian and Quincy, and they took it and made it way better for official ID. And that's the beautiful version that we've got here on the right. So that's now in mainline ID, and it's got a few extra features, like you can turn on and off, you know, are you searching just my edits, or are you looking for validation on everything that's in the viewable area in ID. So they've done a really nice job with that feature. And these checks make it really simple, really easy to catch simple errors and kind of get that fixed up even before it enters the database. Okay, so moving on to the Tasking Manager. You know, we also work in HOTS Tasking Manager with our internal processes. In many parts of the world, remain unmapped, and it's especially true in developing countries. And you know, mapping is kind of a complicated task, even for experienced mappers. And so many of the people in the public team are new. And so one thing we've done is we brought in Rapid here to make it available, so you can just go into that. And I'll show you in a minute how that catches some data issues and makes it really good to draw quality roads up front. Yeah. But before I do that, I want to also talk about this. So here's a case where, you know, it's not about just the tooling or the AI that we've got there, but it's also about the ground truthing. And so we've been working with local teams to spot whether what we're showing is kind of, or what we're seeing in the satellite is actually what we think it is. So here's a case where, you know, from the satellite imagery, we've got two bridges. They look like bridges. You know, we wouldn't know quite how to mark them up properly, but when you actually get on the ground, they're very different, what you see there. You know, one's suitable for walking across, and the other one is you can drive a car over. So it's, you know, kind of this local knowledge you can only get on the ground. And we found that the AI that we have does help here. Like, if we can spend less time digitizing and doing that, it kind of opens up more of the, you know, the time just to be able to get out on the ground and do some ground truthing. And also, we provide this information back to the community so that if you're within the community and looking at satellite imagery, you know, it might provide you some extra perspective on how this is, you know, how you might be thinking about these things from the sky. All right. So over the past year and a half, with AI plus the local mapping team, we've completed more than 99% of the roads in Indonesia. And so here's a short animation. It kind of shows day by day how our mapping has gone there. And yeah, so you can see the distance is ticking up and the feature is ticking up. So yeah, about 18 months of work from last May up until just a few weeks ago is what's present in this visualization. We're in 2019. Yeah, so over 450,000 kilometers mapped, and it's actually over a million features that we've mapped going in there. Okay, so it's a lot. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of work. There's limited time, and everyone their own resources are limited. And so this is why we kind of started to look at ways in which we can speed up the process to improve the data coverage and also to fill in the missing gaps with AI. So I'm going to talk now about what we call our Map with AI efforts, where we get into our work there. And starting about 15 years ago, when satellite images kind of came online and began to be used for mapping, there was kind of a wide debate about privacy, precision, and how we ought to use these things. But today, it's very different. You know, now we're using these regularly. They have known limitations. You know, alignment is one of these notable limitations. But we kind of know how to work with it. It's a known quantity. It feels like computer-assisted mapping is going through the same kind of debate stage right now that we were seeing back then with satellite imagery. Today, we're kind of talking about what are kind of the mundane and repetitive tasks that could be done by a machine to improve the quality of the map and to simplify the process. Of course, for more complicated tasks and kind of in general for bringing knowledge into the mapping you're doing, the human attention and judgment is always something that's required. So kind of the most obvious thing we can do with computers is we have verification and validations, and I showed some of those earlier. And then where we're getting to now is, you know, given the satellite imagery, can we kind of have the computer come up with the roads that are on it or the buildings that are on it and propose those as edits? In the future, you know, there might be things that affect navigation and routing. I don't know. And when it comes to suggesting feature, you know, suggesting the features, I'm going to show soon how we're thinking about doing the roads and the buildings. And then kind of further future, and there's potential here with the auto, like, can we do auto alignment even for the satellite imagery, where that's still an outstanding problem? And what kinds of data sources can we work with in conflating these? Okay. Right. So we've been experimenting with computer-assisted mapping for years. We've had various degrees of success. We've gotten a lot of feedback from the community. And here's what we've done to speed up the road mapping. I want to play this for you. We think after working on it with some design iteration here and there, we've kind of come up with a really great way to kind of merge computer assisted mapping and the tasks you might do as a person. So let me bring this in. So this is kind of a normal workflow coming in from the tasking manager. You know, select a task. We were jumping into Rapid, our editor, and zooming in, kind of what you might do to draw a line by hand. All right, and you might assign road type or kind of get that going. And so now we're going to show what we're doing in Rapid. This is what we've developed based on the machine-learned roads. They're kind of proposed as edits. The geometry that's drawn, the digitization is already pretty good. And you can kind of go in there, select them, choose to add them to the map or not. You'll see that roads that are selected might automatically connect with ways that are already present in OSM. They're conflated. And then here we're showing some of that validation earlier, how it's built in. So you add the roads, validate them, and it's kind of a quicker workflow for working through this. And so this is what we released in July. This is our Rapid editor. And it's the basis of this. So we think with this, we've got the right balance here between what the machine can do and what decisions that you might make as the editor. Okay, so to get to the, to kind of show what it's doing, so to get to the bottom of it all, it's there's kind of a big computer vision model, a neural network, that detects roads from high resolution satellite imagery. So these are the roads that we've detected, kind of raw pixel data from the satellite imagery. It's a challenging task, and terrain can be different throughout the world. So we have a single global model that works across everywhere. Okay. I'm going to skip over for a moment. So let me just bop out in here. Was not on time, but we are actually perfectly on time. Okay. So, right, we have a single global model that we're using across different terrains. This here is Ethiopia. In many cases, the model is advanced enough that it can kind of work correctly all over, but you can see there's still some things that don't quite work out. So in the bottom right, there's a dry riverbed that gets picked up as a false positive, and that's a place where, you know, it's still up to you whether you're going to accept or reject the changes that have been proposed. All right, and here's Nigeria. It's another interesting case, and it has a lot of tree cover. And you see the model's still quite good at picking out the roads. Okay, and lastly is Boston. So this is my home city, and it turns out that we detect all these streets in Boston, which is great. But it turns out Boston's already very well mapped, so having all these might be kind of a lot of noisy data. And so what we do next is the last stage of this process. And what we do is we're doing conflation. Those are a bit thin, but you can see there's the magenta layer over here that's all the roads that we've detected that are not yet in OSM. So on the right-hand side is the OSM database that this is, on the left-hand side, sorry, and on the right-hand side is after we've done conflation with what's there, we brought in. And that's basically how RAPID works. It's pretty, you know, doing that, taking the raw predictions, turning them into a form that are usable and worth bringing in potentially, and then presenting them to you as an editor where you can use that as a basis for your work from that point forward. Okay, and so there we got, so we released this in July. We got some feedback. Two of the big pieces of feedback, one was countries. So we've been adding a lot of countries. Today we just added Zambia and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So those are available. There are many other countries there as well. We've also had a request for a lot of other data sets. So this isn't just a machine learning workflow, it's really a data set workflow where the machine learned data is just one of those available ones. And so if you think data sets not yet in OSM, and you think, you know, kind of conflating that with somewhere, and you think of, hey, buildings might be a nice place to go forward with this, you might think of the Microsoft data set. And they announced yesterday also that they've expanded the US building footprint. There's now in Tanzania and Uganda available another 18 million buildings there. And so what we'd like to do is show you kind of an experimental feature that we put together using buildings here. So this is the standard roads workflow. I'm just going to go over here, kind of highlighting those. And then here we're getting into what we've got is this new buildings workflow. And this is, so you can see it kind of behaves the same way. You select what makes sense, reject what doesn't make sense, and you can move along. All right. Yeah, so what can you do today? Use it, you know, go check it out. See if, you know, if this is something you're interested in. There's mapwith.ai. It's a website you can go check out. You can learn more about this technology and jump into RAPID and do some editing. There's a very special link up here for the experimental buildings feature. That's mapwith.ai/rapid-sotm2019. Try that to see if buildings, you know, it's available in the US, Tanzania, and Uganda. And also today at 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, we'll be talking in Mathematicon B as a Birds of the Feather session, which is in the green square on the back page of your program, if you need to find it. It's a different building. And lastly, you can reach us at MapWithAI feedback on the Slack channel. And so that's the MapWithAI portion. I'm gonna hand it over to Kevin now to talk about ingestion of OSM data.
Hello? Okay. All right, I don't have a ton of time, so I'll try to get through this material fairly quickly. So what Chris was talking about was kind of the upstream of OSM, getting data into OSM using these various models. What I'm going to talk about is how Facebook deals with OSM data downstream, so how we ingest it and kind of clean it up. So restating our vision is to continuously ingest and integrate changes from upstream OSM while keeping the map fresh and correct. Let's see. Okay. So kind of restating what we talked about last year at State of the Map US, we started this project Mobius. We called it Mobius because OSM is never finished. And the main outcome of this project has been this graph theoretic construction that we call logical change sets, or LOCHAs. And we use this to demonstrate that we could ingest just the Thailand roads that our mapping team had created without having to deal with ingesting all the rest of OSM and thinking about how to clean up that data. So this is a real challenge because OSM is massive. There are 20 to 30,000 change sets every day with 3 million daily changes. So there's a ton of data. How do we process this at a regular cadence while maintaining freshness and correctness? So basically, the logical change sets are, we take our version of OSM, and we take a recent snapshot of OSM that's the latest, and we just take a diff of those two things, right? So we're not continuously ingesting, we take a snapshot every few weeks. We take the diff, this gives us a flat list of all of the changes, of all of the features that have changed in since we've last updated. And then we recluster those into a different set of change sets that's kind of orthogonal to the usual notion of an OSM change set. And the point is to maintain geometric integrity. So if in a single change set, someone changed a road over in Thailand and someone changed a road in Germany in the same change set, those should belong in different logical change sets. But then at the same time, if someone creates a road and then later a different person modifies that road, that's kind of the same change set. So we break them up into these clusters. And then we review them, right? So, and then the nice thing about these clusters is that you can sort of reject an arbitrary number of them, accept an arbitrary number of them, and when you apply just that subset, you still get kind of a map that has geometric integrity, right? You don't have dangling references, you don't have roads that just sort of cut off at a tile or something. So that is, in a nutshell, how the LOCHAs work. Okay, so I have to skip a few slides talking about the manual review. The crux of this is that we need to maximize the number of automatic decisions that we make, because human reviewers, it would take just hundreds of human reviewers to actually get through all these logical change sets. So we introduced machine augmented review, and the basic crux here is that you sort of want some of the machine augmented review to figure out if a change set is good or if a change set is bad, and those are kind of separate procedures. And let me just talk a little bit about some of the rules that we use to actually decide whether a change set is good or bad. So first we score things per feature, and then if a given cluster has all approved features, we approve that cluster. If the cluster has a rejected feature, then we reject that cluster. Otherwise, we have to manually review it. And so some of the cool techniques we use are, we use algorithmic curve similarity. So for example, if someone draws a road around a curve and then someone else comes in and kind of modifies it to really make it a little more precise, then we can automatically accept that. We use the AI-assisted validation, so some of the automatic road detection stuff that Chris was talking about we can use to validate other roads. And we look at tag change significance to determine whether a tag change is significant. So changing something from grass to grassland is maybe not that significant, but changing it to a lake is significant. And finally, we use the age of the edit. So if someone edited something, it hasn't been touched in 6 months, that leads us to tend to believe that actually that change is probably okay if it hasn't been reverted. And finally, user reputation. The takeaway here is that we were able to approve 3 million features in 2018. We've 25x'd that since then. And our goal is to get all 1.8 billion features that are between us and the latest version of OSM. And the mission is finally to catch up and stay caught up at a regular cadence. All right, I think I'm out of time, so I guess that's it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah. So, sorry to cut you a little bit, but I also want to give the space to the room to ask a few questions, because I think there are many questions. I see already several hands. Let's take two questions at the same time.
So Whether we use it, Facebook or not, I think we can probably all agree Facebook are in a really powerful position to tell its users that actually the reason your maps are high quality and up to date, or you know, as up to date as they are, is because of OpenStreetMap. So my question is going to be a bit two-part. One is because there's going to be lots of people that want to ask you about attribution and calling it OpenStreetMap, not Facebook Maps at times. But also, I just think, is there anything you're doing to kind of help that perception of, help tell your users why your maps are good on a kind of beyond just attribution?
Can we take a second question just now so we can just answer them all?
Hello. You show how quickly it is to map all these areas in Indonesia and some other countries. And what we have two realities, the one from above and the one on the ground. So how much percentage of all those roads maps through Rapid ID are getting checked if they are correct or not? And if they are not correct, are you also feeding the models to be able to correct that in another cities and other places?
So one question from Miriam about the models and checking the data, and one question about Gregory about contribution. And yeah, more OpenStreetMap as a finding a place on Facebook.
So for attribution, we do have an attribution to OpenStreetMap, and we're currently working to kind of unify the maps experience. You know, we have many different services on many different operating systems, but attribution is a very important topic to us, so we are working to kind of unify that, how people see that.
Right, for them. This is the mapping. So how many things on Rapid are actually validated on as ground truth as well? Do we have numbers around percentage? So I don't have numbers around percentages of the roads that are there now. Find me after, and I could connect you with the right people who would know more about exactly what we've got there. The work that we did in Indonesia that I showed, we're working with HOT, HOT in Indonesia, and there's a local team there. So we, roads tend to get validated where there's more uncertainty rather than less uncertainty coming from the satellite mapping. But I can follow up with you more with that if you'd like.
Let's take one more question.
Hi, thank you for presentation. And I have a question regarding these models. You said you are using single model for the whole world, for all areas. So the question is why you decided to go with a single model, and do some sort of pre-processing of those images so that you can somehow unify them on machine level and something like that.
Sure. So the first part is why are we using a global model rather than, I guess, multiple regional models? And I missed the second question.
So the second question, like, do you do some sort of pre-processing of those images? Like, I don't know, any type of filtering, like, I mean, you can make them black and white and or something like that. I mean, this would be a stupid, I guess, but I mean, any type of pre-processing.
Sure, yeah, there's a good blog post on this. So a single model makes sense because it's working, and then we can train a single model that works for the world, and we can kind of improve everywhere as we go working on it.
But did you compare it to using multiple models, or it was just single shot working from the beginning and that's it?
We should follow up on this. I'll connect you with the people who are, working on the specific models themselves. There's also a great blog post on Facebook's AI blog that goes into some of the detail about exactly what the model is doing that was published back in July.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. This was it. They are still around. So ask your questions. I think there are many more questions. And also, I think there's more to tell from your side, too. So thanks a lot. Give them an applause.
Thank you.